Live from the AF100.
Shall we crack a daisy cutter before we get going?
We should crack a daisy cutter.
Are you a fan of the IPA or a pale ale type of thing?
I am, yes. You should probably record every episode on the camera just so it's like a good point of cred.
Yeah.
Am I decanting properly?
I think you are. All right, let's get rolling. This is Back Focus, a discussion of all aspects of video production, including jobs, gear, technique, philosophy, and strategy. This episode of Back Focus was recorded on March 22nd, 2013. This is episode one. I'm Rob Parker.
I'm Dan Angelucci.
Dan, I almost got your name wrong there because your Twitter handle kind of confuses me sometimes.
What did you almost call me?
Lucci in the sky. Is that's your
Lucci
in the sky?
Lucci in the sky.
I almost call you Lucy sometimes.
I get both.
Double C.
I get both.
Dan Angelucci is Lucci in the sky on the Twitterverse, and
there's no accepted pronunciation by my family. Everyone pronounces it differently.
Just remember two C's and you'll be able to find him. And I'm Parker Digital on Twitter if you want to get in touch. So basically, like I said in the open here, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff relating to production, and we'll see how long this goes. First episode will probably be a little shorter. I'm going to try and prepare a little better next time, and maybe we'll have a regular little news segment, what's coming out, what's going on in the industry, and stuff like that.
That'll be good next week with NAB, which is, I guess, 2 weeks.
Is it?
Yeah.
I know it's close.
Yeah,
April.
It's close, because I'm actually leaving my current job after NAB.
Ah.
Which is a good springboard to the next discussion, which is who we are.
Exactly. Who are we? Well, I'm ready for retirement, and you're just about to start shaving.
So. Yeah. I was like, I should have shaved. And then
make
I remember
a good
it wasn't
pair.
A video.
No,
yeah.
No, I'm just saying you're young and I'm old. So I think we make a good team in terms of being able to talk about stuff from different angles.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to talk about in terms of who you are and what you do?
I am a man. I'm fresh at this podcasting.
I can tell.
We both live in the Philadelphia area, and I am going freelance from working at a rental house. So whereas Rob is an established freelancer, I am moving into the world of freelancing, and there's a lot of challenges that I'm looking forward to taking on.
That's something that we can talk a lot about. I get that all the time from people, like, I want to go freelance, or I want to build up a client list so I can go and kind of be my own person and not work for the man and that kind of thing. And, probably once a month, somebody asked me to go to Honey's and sit down over some scrambled eggs and pick my brain.
Really?
So, which I enjoy. I like talking about stuff and talking about gear and work and talking with people. So, I'm totally cool with it. So, I am sort of established, I guess, in the Philadelphia market and kind of work anywhere anybody will send me. But so, I'm an old man. I've been doing this for 25 years. So.
Are you going to tell them what game you typically shoot to establish your cred?
No. We don't have to go there. I have all kinds of clients, corporate stuff, sports stuff. So you can poke around on my website, parkerdigital.net, which hasn't been updated in 14 years. So it still has all the cheesiness of an early 90s website. No, it's not that bad, but I don't keep up with it like I should. But part of that is just because I'm really busy. So I'd rather be busy and working. But if I do find some the work trailing off, that's when I tend to get to things like that, like updating websites and things. But,
which is a good thing to do because when I go freelance, I kind of have an idea for myself that on the off days, it will be a lot of working to get clients or working on craft.
Yeah.
Because that was one thing with a 9-to-5 job that I didn't like. Was that like you go home and you're just like, I don't feel like working on anything. Or
yep.
You can't do day shoots.
Yeah. So what do you want to do?
That's tough. That's such a... I guess that shouldn't be tough, but I'm going to be a hyphenate, like a director, shooter, editor, gaffer.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully move a lot more into post.
I would like to involve more people that work in different aspects of from what I do in this thing. So that kind of interests me that you are kind of into like directing and writing and conceptualizing things, you know, and coming up with stories and stuff. I know like a lot of your Vine stuff, you're pretty active on Vine. And
I am active on Vine.
That's a very cool little format.
People like to short sell Vine, but I think it's just like, I think it's one of the first social medias that you can't game really. You can't upload from anywhere else. You have to shoot it then.
Yep.
You can't do it later. It's like what you are right then and the limitations. And I think that's good. I think it's a good thing, especially in video when everything is like edited, post-processed, or like gamed for views.
Yep. And it's one of those things that when I use it, I feel like I have to produce. I don't feel like I'm a camera guy or a shooter. I feel like sort of an editor, but mostly like a producer, director kind of person. And you're trying to get the thing just right. You only have a few seconds. For anybody who doesn't know what Vine is, it's basically, what is it, like 5 seconds?
It's 6 seconds.
6 seconds.
Yeah.
And every time you touch your screen, it begins recording. So you touch the screen, it starts recording. And when you release your finger from the screen on your phone, it stops recording. So you can do these little like in-camera edit things, little exercises. Yeah. And it's just the coolest thing when somebody really nails something that's neat.
Yeah. There's a lot of really impressive viners out there.
So, I would like to get more into talking about that kind of stuff. And we'll probably, you know, as I travel around, I'll carry my Zoom recorder and just grab some interviews with people who are producers and directors and maybe clients or, you know, sound guys, whatever, anybody who has an interesting conversation angle.
That would be a very good resource for people like me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because mostly, I mean, where I come from is mostly shooting and editing. And, you know, back in the good old days when I was in college, it was 3/4-inch tape. We were carrying around big decks and old, you know, junky cameras. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it's just such a different, such a contrast compared to how people work today.
Yeah.
And, so I'm really intrigued by people who do this conceptual stuff and who come up with ideas and who write and stuff like that. I think that's really neat. It's something that I don't have the ability to do very often or very, very well.
Well, if I may levy a compliment on you, I think that the reason so many like freelancers are willing to look to you for inspiration is that you, unlike a lot of people in your level of experience, are much more willing to accept advances in technology.
Mm.
Because you're like, you're editing, you're shooting. Some people don't even want to edit. Some people edit but don't want to move past Final Cut 7.
Yeah, I think one of the best bits of advice I could give anybody, and I've given this to a lot of people, is make sure you can do a lot of stuff. Like, don't just be one person. Because, you know, probably, I mean, if you ask me what I do for a living, I would say I shoot. But I also say I edit film and video. And the reason I'm busy is because I do both, I think. I think it makes you better at doing the other one. You know, if you're an editor and you shoot too, you become a better shooter. And if you shoot and you edit, you become a better shooter for the editor. You become a better editor. You understand the concepts and the challenges of the other job.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's hugely valuable to clients. So that's probably why I work a lot, is because I can do a bunch of different stuff. I don't think I'm really the best at anything. I see guys out there who just blow me away, especially younger guys who are doing just ridiculous stuff with DSLRs and time lapses. And I'm like, oh my God, I could never do that, you know?
But a question to you then is, like, are those people the people that are doing just one thing, or?
Those people do a lot of stuff. Yeah. And I think that's why they're successful too. It's just, it's so hard coming from, the background I come from is like, you go out and you shoot a story on this big, heavy, expensive equipment and you don't have a lot of fancy bells and whistles. And, you know, I mean, when I was younger, you know, I would stay up all night in my first couple of jobs and just working on, just messing around doing stuff and learning equipment and stuff like that. And it was really straightforward. It was a lot of mechanical stuff, and it was a lot of, how you're framing your shot and that kind of stuff. Now everything is sort of digital and technique.
Very
in terms
malleable.
Of like, yes, yeah. So you can do all kinds of, the flexibility you have in production is unbelievable now.
I guess it makes, you know, it leads to people being better though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing when I look at stuff that I did, you know, 20 years ago and I think, wow, I really liked that when I did it. And I know people say that all the time, but I guess it's just the progression of technology and concepts and things like that. But the stuff you can do now is crazy. And I see guys do like just soaking themselves in that environment. And, you know, at 47 years old, I don't want to be working till like 4 or 5 in the morning. And, you know, but when I was 25, I was doing that, and it was fun because I was sit there all night, you know, messing around with something or learning a concept or learning how to do a time lapse or whatever. But
which is so, another reason I'm looking forward to moving from a 9-to-5 job, is that I'll be able to work till 5 in the morning.
Yeah. So, what do you see when people come in there? Like what's hot? What are people, I mean, you guys have a lot of gear over there. What are people working with?
It's an interesting, there's a lot of things. It's like, there's no one thing, but one thing I have noticed is that whenever someone's not renting a camera, they're probably using a 5D.
Yeah.
It's just like such a prevalent, it's weird how accepted it's become.
Yep.
I don't know why that is, but maybe because it's the only full frame camera.
Yeah. Well, you know, 10 years ago, if you showed up with a small camera, it was like, you know, you really kind of looked like a schmuck, you know?
What would the small cameras have been back then? Like,
well,
the
I mean, if you were, you know, when I worked in TV news for 15 years yeah. and, you know, everybody had beta cams and stuff like that. You had a proper big camera, you know, or a DVC yeah. Pro camera. And when people started showing up with these smaller Panasonic cameras and, sorry, that's the pup. My sidekick goes everywhere with me, and of course he's going to sit here and bark during the podcast. But when you showed up with a smaller camera, you know, you were kind of like, people were like, oh, look at this guy. Like it's like you weren't a professional. And there would be freelancers that couldn't afford a $60,000 beta cam that would, you know, buy a $15,000 or $20,000 smaller camera. I don't want to say a PD-150, but something in that range where it's like a smaller camera, and show up and shoot. And, you know, you were kind of looked down on, and it took me a while to get over that. And, I mean, a lot of that is just insecurity, and it's not a reflection of the person or their talent or anything like that. So maybe, you know, when you're younger, you struggle with those type of things more than you do when you're older. But now at this point, I mean, everything has become so common to have a small camera.
Yeah.
And
I don't think there's any camera that's not acceptable.
Yeah. And they allow you access,
iPhone, obviously, but I mean,
hey, people are doing great stuff with iPhones.
They are doing great stuff with iPhones, but I think there's very few cameras that aren't acceptable at this point.
Right. And when you show up with a, you know, something small and unobtrusive, you know, you tend, I think, to go a little more unnoticed, which is good a lot of times, you know, and you can get more intimate, you know, just because you don't have this big gigantic thing on your shoulder that kind of scares people.
Yeah. I think one of the constants is we'll never evolve past the person's reaction to the camera.
Right.
And I think that it could take the intimacy out of it. Like you were saying, like whether it's an interview, they could act different, or if you're going up to people on the street, they're probably more comfortable around a camera that looks like a photo camera.
Yep.
Or if they just think it's a photo camera and they're just like, okay, you took my picture, thanks.
How do you deal with people? Like, do you approach people, to strangers, to photograph them or to shoot them at all? Or do you deal with that?
I've thought about doing it. That's like...
Because I'm uncomfortable with it.
I had to do that. I worked... I did some freelance videos for a local news site back when I graduated, before I started at the rental house. And it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's just like you can't do it.
Some people are fine with it, you know, and I have a friend, Dave Mialetti, who shoots for the Philadelphia Daily News newspaper. He's at Mialetti on Instagram. I think it's Mialetti. But anyway, his pictures are just insane. And everything he puts on Instagram is shot with an iPhone. So as he's out working during the day, he's just, you know, every now and then he'll just grab a couple of shots, and he gets these great intimate shots of people on the street and their faces. And, you know, he's one of these guys that can float around and not be intimidating to people.
That's interesting, because I think like a camera is one thing, but an iPhone camera is like another thing, because like there's an implication there of like, if you have their picture on your phone, you could do anything with it.
Yeah.
You could send it to people, like make fun of them. You could put it on, you know, who knows what.
Yeah.
So it's like it crosses, there's like a bell curve, and the 5D and the DSLR is at the top of the bell curve in terms of what people are comfortable with their picture being taken of.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm just always sort of wary of, you know, I'm suspicious when I see somebody out taking pictures, and maybe it's just because of the world that I come from in terms of TV news. That's really where I started. So, you know, I'm just uncomfortable presenting myself that way to people, and I don't like to be intrusive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's hard for me to not be intrusive, because I'm a big dude and I look kind of, you know, disheveled and scary.
So. I'm a squirrely dude, so.
I find the small squirrely dudes can usually slip under the radar better.
It'll help. It'll help at some point.
What else are we going to talk about?
Well, here's a question that I had for you that you told me to save for the podcast.
Oh, yes.
You could edit this out if you want, that I said that.
No editing. Oh, yeah, we'll edit this and, you know, tidy it up.
Similar to the thing about the small camera, we had talked about, I was talking to a shooter owner operator about starting a kit, and I was saying, you know, it might be a good idea to go with like a GH2, because up until this point I hadn't really had much of a kit because I didn't need one. Mm-hmm. But a GH2 is like a very, very, you know, cheap option and it's hackable and you get all this resolution out of it. And he was saying go with the AF100 if you want to go down a similar road, because it's cheap but it's still a video camera and you're going to have the look of a video camera.
Yeah.
And my question was, how legitimate do you think that is anymore?
I think it depends on the client. You know, if the client has sort of a more progressive mindset in terms of gear, then I don't think it matters. But it, you know, I was presented with a situation today where I've been on hold for a client. They keep moving the shoot date, and they finally locked in a shoot date when I'm already booked. So I have to find. They asked if I could recommend somebody else, and there's a guy that I was going to recommend who's terrific, but I was going to shoot the job with an AF100. It's just B-roll following people around at an event. And this guy could do it with a GH2 or GH3. I think he has the new one as well, Panasonic camera, the GH3. He could do it with one of those cameras. It's the same, basically the same sensor in there, and you know,
yeah,
the same lenses, Micro Four Thirds lenses.
Some people say the image quality is even better. That's
it's
up
tremendous.
For debate.
Yeah, the GH3 is sick. It's crazy, but you know, I just don't know if this client will appreciate a guy showing up with a. You know, with a little pocket camera, basically.
Yeah.
As opposed to like what something that looks a little more professional. So that is something to think about. And I think it depends on the client. If they're sort of progressive, they kind of know gear, which a lot of them don't. I think they might be okay with it, but that might be good advice to consider a bigger camera. It's going to cost twice as much money.
That's the thing. I mean, we're talking the difference between $3,500 and $400.
Are you seeing... you know, a lot of the DSLR stuff is still as strong as it was, or are people kind of branching into other cameras like this little Blackmagic camera and stuff like that?
Well, we are on the wait list for the Blackmagic camera, so with no end in sight. But we have only got some calls. Yeah. I think people were legitimately turned off by how long, like people forgot about it, I think. But I think DSLRs are just as strong as ever. If anything, they're moving to like the 5D3 and the GH3 and anything like that. I don't think it's slowing down anytime soon.
And I would imagine that people are kind of like asking for whatever the flavor of the month is. Like if you've seen the F5 or the F55 yet or stuff like that. I mean, it's pretty much anytime a new camera comes out, people have this intrigue and interest in it.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to slow down though, because I think we're going to get to a point where these cameras are all large sensor cameras that was a novelty. And then I wonder if they're all just going to kind of be the same thing with 422 internally, and people aren't going to want to shoot raw. And I wonder if it's just going to slow down to a point where everyone is satisfied with the camera they have.
Yeah. I mean, there's solutions, for all kinds of problems that we didn't have before really now. And, you know, I mean, you can shoot all these wild codecs that give you all this, you know, flexibility, and you have picture profiles you can jam into a camera and sit there and paint the thing all day long. I mean, it didn't used to be that way. And it, you know, I mean, I guess that's for people who have a lot of time to fiddle with stuff. Frankly, I'd rather be, you know, out working, making money and worried less about what picture profile I'm using, as long as the picture looks reasonable and I can do stuff in post.
Yeah.
But you know, there's so many options now. It's overwhelming. It didn't used to be so bad, but now it's crazy. There's too much stuff to absorb unless you really have a lot of time to sit there and read stuff at night and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't have that kind of time. So I tend to hang with a camera for a while.
But do you think there's anything with the AF100 where you feel like there's a limitation? Because it seems like I get the impression that you don't feel that way.
That's pretty much what I shoot with all the time. And, you know, the big limitation with that camera, I think, is just the sensor. It's not, sometimes you want a little more shallow, you know. It's a nice kind of medium, middle of the road look, the Micro Four Thirds. But there are times when, you know, you just want the background really destroyed and it doesn't quite get as far as you want it to get, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you're using a 5D Mark II, even, it's, you can get really amazing blown out background in much easier.
Yeah.
It's much easier to pull off. But
and the Canon lenses are generally faster than the Panasonic lenses too. So you get even more of that.
Yep. Yeah, I've been using the Nikon, you know, the 35 millimeter fully manual Nikon lenses that I bought at B&H, you know, in their used department when nobody wanted them anymore because everything went digital.
Did you get them like before they became useful again?
Yeah, I mean, I have a 51.4 that I bought, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, right when DSLRs were starting to hit.
Yeah.
And these lenses were all over the place. Nobody wanted them. And that's a fast lens. It's a great interview lens.
Yeah.
And it was in mint condition. I mean, it was like a 9+ whatever on B&H's used lens scale.
What'd you get it for?
And it was $169 or something.
That's, I'm jealous. I'm
really it's
jealous.
A great lens.
As someone who has to buy lenses soon, I'm very jealous.
There's a great website that has all these old used lenses. I think it's KEH. Do you know them?
KEH.com. I've heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, they send me a catalog every now and then, and they just have...
I'm going to make a note of that on my phone during the podcast.
KEH.com. Yeah, they'll have, you know, 30 or 40 of any given lens, you know, like if you want a Nikon 1.4 F-mount, whatever, fully manual lens, they'll have dozens of them in all different sort of conditions and...
Are they sponsoring the show right now?
Oh, yeah. I would like to thank them as a sponsor. No, I wish they were. We don't have any sponsors, but that'll be way down the road when I no longer have any work and I can actually hook that up.
Just talk to advertisers.
Yes.
But the Micro Four Thirds thing. I mean, that's interesting that's like one of the inherent advantages of Micro Four Thirds, and maybe someday we could do like an advantage, disadvantage of certain cameras, but any camera where you can modify and add lenses...
Yep.
You know, different mounts, vintage lenses. I think there's a lot of added value there.
Right. And there's, you know, the adapters and stuff are cheap. I mean, you can get any kind of adapter to anything for relatively cheap. I mean, the PL stuff is a little more expensive.
Yeah.
But I've shot, you know, with $20 adapters for years, and there's no light leaks or anything. I mean, sometimes they're a little clicky or they don't quite seat properly. But, you know, I don't do a lot of like rack focusing stuff with those kind of lenses. I mean, if I was going to get into that type of stuff, you know, that would call for a better lens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these lenses are, I mean, they're great lenses, but they're made for a still camera.
Yeah.
And even the Canon L lenses are made to be autofocused on a still camera. They're not made to be racked for video, you know?
Yeah, which is why they have their cinema lenses now.
Yeah. So, but there are a lot of options, you know, you can get into it reasonably cheap. So it's not, you know.
Yeah. I think that's why you see a lot of people starting to move towards the GH2 because they saw how cheap it was. And like, I was on DVX User and that was the forum that had the most people in it.
Yeah.
Even more than the Canons. And the Canons, I think, are just better known. I don't think people know about the GH2 as well, but I think it's catching on because you get higher bit rate when you hack it. You can use cheaper lenses. So I guess it's probably a good time to buy before more people catch on.
Yep. Have you guys messed with any of this? Is it Magic Lantern, the sort of the hacks for the Canon cameras?
We haven't. We've thought about it. I think it's on the 5, not on the 7, something like that. But we as a rental house, it was like, well, we can't actually send this out because if it's unstable, then. But we've had people say, can we put it on when we send it out? And it's just like, yeah, if it doesn't do anything, yeah. I mean, if it doesn't affect the camera.
Someone actually told me that the latest version for like the 7D or the 60D or whatever, you install it in the camera on a card, on a memory card, and it has to be on the memory card as well.
Yeah.
And if you pull the card out, then the camera reverts back to its previous settings.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild. Yeah. I mean, that sort of makes it feel a little safer, you know?
Yeah, which is why we couldn't really install it at the rental house because then it just takes up a card that we can't use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should wrap this puppy up. It's a little early. This is a quick one, about a half hour, but we'll be a little bit better prepared with maybe some, you know, one talking point and a little industry news or something and ramp this thing up. But hopefully people will like it and we'll see how long it goes.
Maybe. Yeah, I hope you, the listener, enjoy this and I hope you feel like there's insight. And we'll take any questions people have as well.
Yeah, get in touch on Twitter. You're
Lucci in the sky, like Susan Lucci.
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah. And I'm Parker Digital on Twitter. We will talk to you shortly. I guess whenever we can roll up another one of these, hopefully we'll do these weekly.
All right.
Thanks, Dano.
Thank you.
See ya.